It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's episode of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast comes in association with Nutmeg, the Scottish football periodical. The subscription-only quarterly publication is filled with top-quality writers, great articles and fascinating stories about the beautiful game in Scotland. Get your subscription at www.nutmegmagazine.co.uk.
Yes, I feel that way sometimes too. Hello and welcome to Monday's edition of the Terrace Scottish Football Podcast. Today's podcast is like a Yorkie bar, big, fuck off and not for girls. My name is Craig Telfer and I'm hosting this evening's show to hone my skills as a broadcaster and a media personality. Today I'm joined by a man who won't take no for an answer, it's Joel Skid.
Hello, I'm not sure what you're referring to.
And a man who's making his first appearance on the show for over a month. He likes American things so much, he only bloody went there for 3 weeks. He's drinking a Dr. Pepper from the cooler and putting on the tab. It's Texas Craig Fowler.
Hello.
How was your trip to America?
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Now, as kind of in that mood right now where I'm only recently back, less than a week back, I'm still quite... I don't know, still quite tired from like drinking literally every single day for like 3 weeks. And people just keep asking me how good it was. And I was kind of, I liked it to start with, it was fine.
But oh, I'm sorry for inquiring about my friend's holiday for three weeks.
It's not anybody else's fault other than mine. And just after really like, after this conversation,
I saw Craig at the football on Saturday and turned round to him and went, so was it, it's good. He was like, yeah, and basically he was like, yeah, I was in America. Like, no, the football.
did you try anything out? Did you try a Wendy's or anything like that?
In-N-Out Burger.
Okay.
That was,
is that from Wendy's?
Or
is that,
no, was that it's an own kind of chain thing. It's right. Only really, I think, on the West Coast.
Cool.
Don't have it like New York or that.
What about Twinkies or pretzels? You try them?
Don't have any of them. I had a Chipotle. They were
okay,
quite nice.
Cool. Taco Bell.
Yes, actually, people say don't go to Taco Bell, but there was one on the strip in Vegas, not far from a hotel.
Kind of looking
for something that wasn't too unhealthy, and Taco Bell had burrito bowls, which were quite nice.
Okay, so were you eating healthily when you were over there?
Trying to as much as possible. Yeah, failing some of the time. As I said, went In-N-Out Burger twice. So
you're only human.
Was In-N-Out Burger, was that in the film of Keenan and Kel?
That was Good Burger.
Good Burger. Move on.
And on that sorry note,
this is never going to happen from around an actual tune.
Remember the funniest thing in Keenan Kill? See when he puts a screw in his tuna.
Yes.
You ever seen that? That's hilarious. I don't think Keenan Kill was that funny, but that bit in the courtroom.
The film was actually called Good Burger.
Yeah, it was Good Burger. Is it Welcome to Good Burger?
Can I take your order?
Could
it
be Welcome to In-N-Out Burger? Can I take your order? That's not what it was, though. Because I didn't know the name of the movie.
Here we are, we're 3 minutes into the show, we've not even talked about football. But as our regular listeners will know, soccer. Monday night... Fucking hell, yeah. Let's talk about soccer. Do you see any American sports when you're over there?
Yeah, I went to a Chargers game in LA and a Yankees game in New York.
Now, as our regular listeners will know, the Monday night edition of The Terrace focuses exclusively on the Scottish Premiership, and like a ball pit in a children's soft play area, we're going to dive right in. Now, this weekend there's so many talking points from the weekend's action. I think every game has got something interesting to look at, so it's difficult to know where to start. But let's begin by going to my least favourite place to drive to. It's Livingston, because they beat Stephen Gerrard's Rangers, as we're now obliged to call them anytime we talk about them. They beat them 1-0 courtesy of Dolly Menga's first half strike. Guys, what did you think of yesterday's game?
I thought it should have coming out of it. If Livingston won 3 or 4-0, that would have been fully deserved.
Because Alan Lithgow could have scored one of the goals of the season.
I think that would have been the goal of the season. Just because it was Livingston and it was Alan Lithgow.
Fair play, Alan Lithgow. You think he's part of one of the best defences in the country, and to think his career trajectory 4 years ago, he was almost relegated into League Two with Stenhouse Muir, and now he's...
And a few years before that, he was in a car.
Yeah, that
he enjoyed himself in the car though. Yeah. A little too much.
Aye.
He's enjoying himself on the pitch now.
that's a good way back into it. What do you think of Livingston's performance here? There's Joel saying 3-0 wouldn't have been unfair.
Yeah, I mean, Gerrard said after the game that he didn't think that he kind of said we knew what Livingston were about. We knew they'd get set pieces. And there'd be a threat from them, and that's what happened. But it was kind of along the lines of, we didn't really think they would cut us open, meaning from open play. Now, the goal itself didn't technically come from open play, but it was a second ball. Mm-hmm. And it was worked as of a kind of open play move. It wasn't just a ball swung into the box and like loads of bodies in there. It was worked very well down the right-hand side and cut back to Menga.
Poor defender.
Poor defender as well.
Too touchy, allowed to take a touch from 6 yards before hitting the shot.
Yeah, not only that, Scott Robinson's run to the byline wasn't picked up by two Rangers players, I forget who it was.
Arfield and the other one escaped me. Candace was the one who was running at goal side of Menga.
Yeah, and that kind of summed up the differences in kind of performance and attitude for the two sides, but Gerrard said they didn't cut them open. I mean, fair enough, I think a lot of Livingston's chances came from maybe kind of mistakes for the Rangers' backline, but 2 minutes in, they cut them open. Scott Pittman had a good chance, maybe should have scored that early on. They had other chances, better chances than Rangers, so I'm not entirely sure what Gerrard was talking about. But I think I've kind of looked mainly at Rangers for this game, kind of compared to the... because it's the only one of the games I've watched back on Y Scout, so I looked at their kind of performance to the previous game. But before I get to that, I think maybe Joel should wax more lyrical about Livy, because Livy fans, I think, are... maybe feeling that they don't get the credit they deserve in Scottish football right now.
Well, yeah, that's what I'm just going to come on to. There's Callum Carson, who's a sports editor at the West Lothian Courier. He tweets incessantly about Livingston and how they haven't been given enough credit, or the right kind of credit, for their success over the last 2.5 seasons. He wrote, "The reasons Livingston won: number one, the pitch is shite. Number two, Rangers had an off day. Number 653, Levy are actually a pretty decent team and play well." So is Callum Carson right and everyone else wrong about how Livingston play, Joel?
Yeah, I really, in terms of the way they play, I really enjoy watching them. They are something different to the Scottish Premiership. I mean, we've seen it before with Motherwell. There's not they're quite similar to Motherwell last season in the way that they're kind of aggressive, they are direct. But the one thing that, there's so many things that really impress me, their organisation. They funnel attacks down the wings because they know if they're going to cross it in, they've got Halkett, who's been superb this season, probably one of the most consistent players in the division. Lithgow, who was strangely left out by Miller at the start of the season to Stephen Saunders, and Declan Gallagher. They just win everything in the air. I think they've got the highest dual success rate in the air this season, and they use that to their advantage when getting a free kick. Every time they get a free kick around the halfway line, it goes into the box. They win second balls constantly. I think that's a massive thing about the Scottish Premiership this season. Every team that's doing well has got a player that picks up on second balls. Haring at Hearts, Power at Kelly, no one at Dundee. And So there's a lot of talk about their organisation, their energy. They suffocate teams just the way they hunt in packs. They get
the three centre midfielders.
So you've got the three centre midfielders, Robinson and Menga in front, and the three behind them. It's just like a wall for teams to. It's so hard for teams to get at them, because you either need to be very good at taking. You need players who are good at taking opponents on, taking with the ball. But when you beat one opponent. So if just say you get past Burn, there's Jacobs, there's Pittman.
Sounds like Gauntlet and Gladiator.
Yeah, exactly.
Describing.
It's a great way to put it. Or you need to be able to play really quickly, and that's Rangers didn't do that. Teams haven't been able to do that. Hearts pushed really high up the pitch. They played a really high line, which made it difficult for Livingston to create chances. I don't think they created too much against Hearts, certainly compared to Rangers. But again, Hearts themselves struggled to find a rhythm because of the way Livingston pressed them. Also, the way there may not be another team so focused as in Livingston when they're out of possession. They're constantly on it. They're winning loose balls. They are brighter. They're quicker. They're more alert than the opposition. They can play football if they want to. Jacobs, Pittman, and Byrne, they're all very composed on the ball. Menga does really good job holding up. Robinson has been incredible compared to what he was the last time he was in the Premiership. But he was playing for East Fife when Livy signed him. However. They know what they're good at. I don't think they need a manager, to be honest, because it's Hopkins left, and even under Miller they were still decent. The way they got their points was by doing what they do best, and then so they kind of just need a custodian.
Is it David Martindale then, the custodian, who's should be getting the credit?
Every time the camera goes on to the side of the pitch, he looks like the manager. He's beside or in front of Tolt barking out instructions. He's the first when someone gets a substitute. He's the first one to greet them, like shake their hand. And then at the full time like yesterday, the camera panned and everyone was celebrating. Martindale was on the pitch, giving Steve Lawson coaching instructions, obviously no one can see what I'm doing, but he was talking about body shape. And then he was doing things with his fingers. It's a bit unique, but it's working for them.
Craig, and conversely then, if Livingston were so good, why were Rangers so bad? Steven Gerrard after the match said they could have played for days without scoring.
Oh yeah, he was certainly right. They were so poor in attack, they just had nothing pretty much the entire game. He changed his formation again for an away match. The last kind of really kind of disappointing, well, obviously the Celtic result was disappointing, but you know, losing 1-0 at Celtic Park isn't the worst of your results you're going to have in any season. But obviously there was a disappointment with the Motherwell game where they conceded 3 goals, 3-3 draw, even though they played reasonably well. That game he changed his formation, putting the team in a back three, and the defence didn't respond to that. This one, I was away, so I'm kind of losing track of when the games were. Was the last game before the St Johnson? Or was that...
They played St Johnson last week.
Yeah, so Villarreal didn't come after that. That was before.
Villarreal was... So they went Villarreal, St Johnson, Ayr, right, okay. Levy.
Oh yeah, so there was Ayr as well.
Yeah.
So I just kind of looked at the St Johnson game and contrasted with this. So in the St Johnson game, they played with a 4-3-3 with Ryan Kent and Daniel Candace, the wingers, but both of them were very, very narrow. So it was a kind of proper 4-3-3, not really a 4-5-1 with two players kind of stuck to the touchline. They interchanged very well, the midfielders supporting them very well, and that team as well, I think it was Arfield, McCrory and Koulibaly, so it was very combative in the middle. This one, the move to a 4-4-2, bringing Lafferty back in and Morelos, they didn't look like a partnership whatsoever, and Ejaria came into the team and played kind of like a kind of inverted role in the left midfield. And he then played in the centre midfield for the second half. Pretty sure he lasted the 90 minutes. He was very poor throughout. This was not the type of game for him. He does have skills and he is very good with the ball at his feet, in terms of the fact that it's hard to get off him. He's a big guy, he's got good close control, and he can kind of manoeuvre around in close areas and keep the move going. However, he is very languid and he does like to keep on the ball, and in this game where Livy just, as Joe says, go after absolutely everything, he couldn't really afford somebody to take that much time on the ball. Even when he wasn't being hounded out of possession or being forced to give it up, he was just taking too many touches and slowing down everything that Rangers tried to do.
It was strange in that Rangers, the way Rangers started, Livy actually changed formation. from the start, because they obviously started with three at the back as usual. They went to a four, and Robinson drifted outright. But once Livy did that, Rangers had no answer.
Yeah, because that was the only thing they really had in the early going, was that the wing, not really wing backs, because Rangers kind of dropped one of the midfielders and would push Tavernier and Barisic up very high. Mm-hmm. And that was really the only thing they had early on, was kind of the ability to get those guys in one-on-one situations out wide and put balls in the box. But even then, there wasn't really a chance that came from it. They didn't, the quality was poor, they often didn't take the opportunity, we just kind of pass it back, and it was, the whole performance is just, everybody was poor.
Now, proving that a broken clock does tell the correct time twice a day, Tam McManus actually tweeted something interesting. He said that Celtic's poor start to the season has masked how badly Steven Gerrard's Rangers have started. Now, statistics, 11 points from 7 games, they're as close to Dundee at the bottom of the table as they are to Hart and Midlothian at the top. They haven't won away a game away from home all season, 2 points from their 4 games. Should Steven Gerrard be under greater scrutiny for the start Rangers have made to the season? I'm just thinking, sorry, just one of the things that you mentioned there when you talked about the change of formations. Does he know what his best formation is? Does he know what his best 11 is?
Probably not yet. But they are, Europe is something that I think has maybe disrupted their form in the league somewhat. And you can't just, I think it's very easy to separate and go, oh, look at their dreadful form in the league. It is very poor. I mean, can't get away from that. I've not won a game away from home yet. That's terrible for Rangers in the Scottish Premiership. But at the same time, you can't just completely remove the European games and put them to one side. That comes into it. That disrupts the squad and the kind of weekly preparation that other teams don't have to deal with. Celtic have obviously got as well, and they've had a poor start to the season. In Europe, he's performed well above expectations, and they're still in the League Cup. So that part of it is good, and the league part of it is poor. So I'd say overall, he's doing a job that's slightly above average. Maybe a wee bit above average, but not much more than that.
Yeah, I think Europe has certainly diverted some attention. It's weird because away from home in Europe, they are really well organised, but I think they're more defensive. Or maybe in domestic competition, they're still trying to search for that balance going forward. I mean, at home, they're back to not being a soft touch. The last few seasons under Kashin, under Warburton, teams could go there without that trepidation that used to be there, and sweat with both sides of the old firm. That's returned. So there was a lot of talk from Rangers fans that he was the Messiah. I think that was a bit premature. However, they're making progress, just not as quick as we thought might have happened when they did so well in Europe.
Now, from Livingston, we'll take the short trip to Edinburgh to league leaders Hart and Midlothian. Now, Hearts maintained their excellent start to the season with a very decent 2-1 over St Johnson. Headers from Peter Haring and Haring. Christ, can we start that one again?
No.
Christ. Headers from Peter Haring and Jimmy Dunn gave them the win to maintain their 5-point lead at the top of the Premiership. Now, going by the highlights, Hearts look very impressive. Joel, I know you were at the game. You tell me what you thought of it.
I thought the Hearts from Midlothian Hurricane were... copyright to someone said on Twitter. In spells, Hearts played some really, really good football. The highlights on Sports Scene probably didn't... It suggested the game was more even than I think it was.
It must have looked like Hearts were by far the better team going by the highlights.
There was more St Johnson chances that kind of evened the balance of play up. But the game should have been dead and buried before Callaghan brought it back to 2-1. Some of the football has been really positive, and there's a real excitement going to Tynecastle now. Used to, it was just it was just football day out. Looking forward to the match. I was working in a professional capacity and may have almost got out by a seat when Jimmy Dunn scored. but there's players who are really coming to the fore who I was unsure of in terms of Michael Smith and Callum Morrison.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about Callum Morrison because 12 months ago he was on loan at Stirling Albion in League 2 and doing a very decent job of it. So it's, as a lower league observer, it's very heartening to see him coming to the Hart and Midlothian first team and make an impact.
Yeah, he's... I think, again, it shows the positives of going out and getting actual first team football, because some players who were used sparingly last season in the Premiership in tricky and difficult circumstances. They're now out on loan, and I think they're looking to get that boost. Morrison last season, he probably could have, Hearts probably could have used him just because there was no pacing with, but for the player's development, it was probably best he was away from the shit show. Although he did spend the second half of the season at Beacon. he's been really positive. I think there was question marks still about Hearts, the pace and width of Hearts, but the last two games he's stretched the game. He's developing really well with Michael Smith, who I think's been it's hard to say Hearts' most consistent player when there's been likes of Haring and Lee who've just been sensational. Haring especially,
yeah.
I could wax lyrical about him, but Smith has really impressed, and you should just expect him as a kind of defence, a really solid fullback, but now he's kind of enjoying the attacking aspects of it as well.
No, Peter Haring, Craig, he's a player that's coming for a lot of praise from the Hearts fans. What do you make of him?
Just to tuck this stunner into my belt. Right here. Yeah, he's
a real gem.
Oh yeah, he's just his all action style in the middle of the park. He just completely controls the area. When he's on his game, I heard he was poor against Livy, but I didn't see that game.
Both him and Lee, I don't think they were.
Everybody gets put off by the Livy midfield, so it's just hard for everybody. But yeah, he always seems to pop up in the right place to win the second ball. He's an incredible threat from aerial set pieces, and also that's something I want to mention as well, is the fact that Hearts, for the first time, feels like ever, are a consistent threat from set pieces. I know they've kind of got that reputation, but you always thought it's maybe just because I think every football fan thinks their team are poor at set pieces, even when they're probably the best in the league, because you're only successful so much of the time. So maybe Hearts have been better than I thought, but now I actually feel like the first time in ages Hearts have a real threat from set pieces. It's due to guys like him, but also Ollie Lee's crossing, which has been really good. It really puts a ball in that is just unworkable. Like, it's too clear to the goalkeeper, or overhits it, or completely underhits it. It's always usually in a decent area, and it gives the players on the team a chance to attack it. And there's plenty of guys in the team who can do that.
And it's huge improvement on dead ball specialist Mallory Martin.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny. Lee was massively advertised as a big dead ball specialist. He just quietly
learned the lesson.
Martin, I watched. We're going to come onto it on the Patreon. About winners and losers, but I watched the first half of the Dunfermline Partick Thistle game, so that firmly placed me.
You're the loser.
Yep. And Martin, I think he was on the first four or five corners. The sixth corner was not taken by Martin because he didn't beat the first man at all.
See, Peter Haring, what level do you think he could ascend to?
I think he could be a Championship in England player. I don't think he's quite good. He's not got ability for any higher than that.
I think he has.
He's probably a very good Championship player in England, because that's a very kind of up and at them kind of league, and that would suit his style.
But he can do everything, and I think he's perfectly suited to Hearts Midlothian Football Club for the next 10 years. you look at him, and I think when he's, it's great having a physical, a tall person in the middle of midfield for just winning aerial battles. Again, I go back to getting on second ball, loose ball. He's probably the best in the division for it. And his passing is really good. His first time passing is really good. He's really intelligent. Levine was saying afterwards that they signed him as a centre back, but they knew that when he was coming through Austria Vienna, I think it was, that he was an attacking midfielder.
Now, what about St Johnson? I mean, as an outsider, they're probably the least interesting side in the Premiership. Is there anything interesting we can say about them?
We've called them sexy St Johnson at times this season, and because they do have more kind of interesting players in their team now. The problem with this game is that the sexiness about the team was either not playing well or not fit. So Tony Watt and Danny Swanson both came off the bench.
Watt had a couple of decent chances.
Yeah, both of them made a bit of an impact. Swanson kind of lost the rag a wee bit. I think he threw the water bottle towards the fans and stuff.
No, I think he kicked it.
Kicked the water bottle towards the fans. Yeah, but he wasn't really pleased with the reception he got when he came on.
Well, speaking of respect, Ross Callaghan scored a typically muted celebration, because football's all about respect, and it's good to see Callaghan showing respect.
Well, I wonder what would have happened
players.
Had it been a goal that would have put them 3-2 up, for example, rather than a goal when they were 2-0 down, scoring, they've only like 50 15 minutes left. It was easy enough to just run back to halfway line and not celebrate. I wonder if we would have done the same if it was like a last minute equaliser.
It was arguably his best performance at Tynecastle.
I don't think he was that good.
No,
I didn't notice he was even playing for
most of the time. He had a really I think it was the, you saw the positives of what Callaghan can bring to a team. I think he got forward really well. The chance he set up for Dre Wright was really good. Dre Wright is someone I think is going to be a good player for St Johnstone. Matty Kennedy on the other's hand,
he was very poor.
Yeah,
and also McMillan as well, topped off by the point in the game where the Hearts defenders backed off him, giving him about 15 yards of space to meet a high ball, and McMillan just headed it right out of play.
St Johnstone fan, yeah, that was a terrible header. St Johnstone fans think we're calling for him to get back in the team. Tommy Wright, I think, was quite agitated with his performance. St Johnstone 1884 on Twitter got in touch with me. He was asking me about who was marking at corners for St Johnstone, because they defended corners against Celtic last week really well. There's 15 or 20 of them, but last season they lost 21 goals from set pieces, and it's something that Wright said that he was going to be working on.
Two things I want to say before we move on, just something a little bit negative about Hearts. It's kind of a positive and a negative, because I thought they played some really nice football on the deck, and it went completely against the stereotypes of Levine's side, and it had to be done because without Uchi in the side and with Vanacek not arriving until January, there isn't that physical, like real big kind of football point.
When they zip in McLean is fantastic.
So you got McLean, Naismith and June. The only problem with that is while they're linked up very well, I still thought they were missing that extra spark in attack. Morrison was good, but he's still a young player, mm-hmm. and he can't really kind of be relied on continuously throughout a game to be that player that brings the pace and also brings the quality. And without Uchi as well, I just thought that it wasn't a surprise that Hart scored the two goals from set pieces because of Lee's delivery, and every other shot was kind of like around the edge of the box. Apart from that, I think McLean's chance, which came from a goalkeeper rebound, which
and
he should have scored.
Naismith Smith cutback.
I thought they kind of missed that final little bit of incisiveness, or like somebody like Uchi could just take it into the penalty box and then turn and shoot, or just lay it off for an easy chance for somebody else. But the fact that Hart still won, still played well, still dominated the game without him is a massive plus point, because prior to this week, Hearts hadn't won without him in the team. They won against Motherwell, and then they won again. I suppose they won against Broader Rangers. But I mean,
Cove,
whatever.
No, he came on against Cove.
Aye, but the game was already done by that point. And final point, Danny Amankwa came off the bench for this game.
He looked bright.
Actually looked bright.
Yeah.
Now, it's very, he didn't really do anything, because he was only kind of on to provide something in a defensive sense. But he moved a lot quicker. He looked lighter on his feet. He looked more kind of determined and up for it. And that's something we've not seen from him. And Levine's not somebody who's going to just bring a player back because he's like, I like you, I'll give you a second chance. If he thinks a player's poor, and so far he's thought of Manquist poor, and as I think privately and publicly slagged off his fitness. If he's brought him back in, obviously Manquist doing something well in training, and if Hearts can get that extra player in attack who's got that pace, he's a winger. That's the only thing that kind of, even though they have Morrison, there's not really much behind him.
Either that, or it's a damning assessment of Jake Mulroney that he's dropped out.
Yeah, I'm just ignoring him completely.
Can Hearts win the division?
No.
Yes.
Dundee record their first win of the season with a very decent win at Hamilton Academical. Andy Boyle and Carl Madaniaga.
Sorry, I've been away for a while. Who the fuck are Ennis and Boyle?
Ennis is loan signer from Crystal Palace. Boyle has signed a 2-year deal from Preston, I think. Or he might be on loan from Preston.
So one of them,
two centre backs.
Both of them arrived before the end of the window.
Yeah.
No, I messed up.
That was not just the first one of the season, the first time they've taken any points all season. They're still rooted to the bottom of the table, but a little bit closer to daylight, just a point above St Mirren. What did you guys think of the match?
There was one shot on target in the first 38 minutes.
Okay. I mean, to be honest, it's a bit of a nothing match. The only talking points I thought from it was how much had Hamilton missed Mikael Miller? He was absolutely phenomenal against St Mirren the week before. They didn't have him. He was somebody who would roam laterally and certainly caused a threat with two goals set up the other. They didn't have that against Dundee.
It certainly didn't help that the players that came in, so they played a 4-4-1-1, and so you're talking about Stephen Boyd played at number 10. You're talking about Sean Kelly?
Yep.
Right mid, Dougie Emery left mid. All of them were poor. So you didn't give much service to striker guy.
Bergstad, I think.
Yes.
This is why I don't want to be. I like New McCann, so I was glad that Dundee won. I can fully understand why Dundee fans want to get rid of him, because they've been dross, and
they still rode their luck a little in this one.
Yes,
Hamilton missed a sitter and hit the bar twice,
and Hamilton were very good. Dundee were not great either. It was Dundee started this. It's weird, even though they keep getting beat, they started games well. They knocked the ball round, in the first 15, 20, maybe 25 minutes. Made one opportunity, but then it was the same old, can't get a goal. They kind of froze, and Hamilton came into it, and then realised, like, oh, Hamilton are very, very good either, so what? It was just like I don't know.
Two teams having an existential crisis.
it was like two Magikarps coming up against each other in Pokemon. Splash.
We spoke about Neil McCann there. See in this sort of instance, if you want rid of the manager, and you ever been in that position where you thought, well, you know, if we lose, it might not necessarily be the bad thing because it pushes him out the door.
Like
Dundee United, we'll come on to them shortly. No, we won't. We'll come on. Other people will talk about them on Thursday. Beg your pardon. But what does this mean for Neil McCann? Is it bought more time if Dundee lose next week? Does that push him further out the door? They've got Kilmarnock on Saturday. What does this result do for Neil McCann's esteem?
They're at home at Killie, aren't they? And I think they've got a couple of agreeable fixtures after that as well.
Livingston's one of them.
I think they might give him this wee run. I think that might have bought them instead of just one game. It depends. If they lose heavily against Kilmarnock, that might be it. But as Gary kind of discussed on the last show, the Dundee board are very hesitant to pull the trigger, so I think it might give them these few games.
They're already penning a new contract for
them. What result? Have an extra zero. We'll find you on the dead foxes we can for the Bobbycock stand. You can cook them or whatever.
No, I mean, it's... there was... I'm trying to look at my notes.
The one with Paul McGowan, that's an impressive thing, considering that last season they fell apart when either McGowan or Kamara weren't playing.
Yeah, Kamara was back in. He was decent. He was decent in the centre midfield. Miller again, he's just given them a bit extra on loan from Celtic. He looks really good. A bit of drive. Their formation's weird. They were playing 4-4-2, but it was very narrow. It's very narrow.
So it wasn't a diamond.
Kamara was deepest, and then I'm not sure where kind of Spence was playing, so it was interchangeable. I'm not gonna lie, it just wasn't a very good game.
Well, what was a good game though was Kilmarnock's 3-1 win over Motherwell. They maintained their excellent start to the season, despite Curtis Main scoring the lead early doors. Greg Stewart, Chris Burke and Eamon Brophy turned it around to keep Kelly in fourth. Kilmarnock particularly in the second half looked very impressive.
Yeah, it's great to have the old Greg Stewart back.
Mm. Mm, he's excellent.
Aberdeen could really do with a player like that.
he did get his moments there last season in Aberdeen's team. Like they did use him as a number 10 / kind of second striker. But
a 9.5.
Is that what he is?
Like Michael Cox.
I just wanted that response.
But I don't think they ever really committed to it fully, and he would often play out wide. And when he played it wide,
McInnes's tactical tombola.
Yeah, and when he played it wide for Aberdeen, I always thought he was a bit deeper than he'd ever seemed when he played for Dundee. When he's Dundee, he would often play on the wing, but he seemed to be very kind of high pushed up, and I think Hartley would often play him with three centre midfielders, so they would kind of.
He didn't have much defensive responsibility.
Yeah, whereas I think at Aberdeen he was asked to do a lot of that, and he would routinely pick up the ball like around about the halfway line on the wing, and kind of as one of the more creative members of the team be expected to kind of do something. And he really struggled, but he also struggled, as he admitted himself, his fitness wasn't there, and the fact that he's presumably this summer not had three holidays and actually committed to pre-season, that may be a reason why he's doing it as well, because footballers will tell you all the time how huge pre-season is and the momentum you can get from that.
But there's some players that can get away with it. Stewart's body type I don't think is capable of that, and like I think he was involved, he certainly scored a cracking goal for Birmingham in pre-season, so it wasn't a case of like a few players that came in towards the end of the transfer window, they've been given kind of 3 or 4 weeks to get up. He was ready to come in straight away. And the partnership, they complement each other really well. Brophy stretches the game. He's all action, a bit too greedy at times. Stuart is McHugh and Bigger Amana were just all at sea.
Yeah.
With Stuart, just his movement, and it's like you're watching aspects of the game where there was one moment where he turned McHugh. It's like how did you get done so easily? But he keeps doing it. He keeps doing it to players.
Now, the Motherwell had taken the lead through Curtis Main. It was sort of your proto-Motherwell goal, where it was a two-headed flick-ons before the ball broke to Main, who shot low. But the match seemed to turn on a penalty incident where Stephen O'Donnell fouled, and I'm using the bunny ear quotations there, was fouled Aaron Taylor Sinclair. Do you think it was a penalty?
No.
Yeah.
What? You thought it was a penalty?
Yeah. I mean, O'Donnell tried to get out of the way, but he didn't.
No, I'm not having that. He didn't do anything. He's allowed to be there.
No, but it was basically where he was. Taylor Sinclair was flying in the box, and I mean, it was like Taylor Sinclair couldn't really get out of the way.
No, I'm not having that. He didn't stick his leg out or anything. There was major contact.
He needed to have a step back rather than just he didn't move. He had his leg, and they brought it back in, but he didn't move from where he was standing.
You're allowed to stand, though.
Yeah, you're allowed to stand, but it was
something runs at you. That's not a foul.
Well, in the penalty boxes. you see it outside the box as well. It's like if you turn your back, like someone knocks the ball past you and you're still standing, like turn your back or you stand, it's usually given as a foul.
I wouldn't say always, no.
It's usually, I didn't say always.
I think usually is a bit strong as well.
Curtis Mead missed the penalty, and at that point the match
turned ball don't lie.
In Kilmarnock's favour. What happened? What happened at that point to let them come back into the match?
Motherwell is very guilty right now of giving away cheap goals, and
Burke's goal was particularly.
Oh yeah, they've just not found the right formula at the back this season. Last term, I mean, don't get me wrong, they weren't the most, you know, what's the word? Stingy defence in the entire league. But they kind of seemed to have a good setup. The players all complemented each other well in the three centre halves. So yeah. It was either Hartley or Aldred as the kind of no nonsense man in the middle. And then you had the kind of maverick styles of Cedric Kiepre, who was incredible at intercepting the ball as well, something Mullow will have struggled to do this term. And on the other side, you'd have Charles Dunn, who, while he wasn't great on the ball, provided a bit of pace for the back line. And they all worked well. This year they've not found the right formula. They've also had injuries as well, so Dunn's been out and I think Stillwell'll be out for another month or so. Hartley's kind of been in and out of the team with a few kind of niggles. Aldred was decided to come back. It's still to see whether him and Hartley could kind of mesh together successfully in a back three, and they're just
still the wing backs as well. They brought Taylor Sinclair in, he's not really done it.
He's not good defensively, so I'm
sleeping with Burke. And then you've had, so we moved Tate, no matter where Tate plays, right or left, he's fine. But then if he plays left, you play Cadden right. Cadden just not had a good season. I feel like I've got a
vendetta
against, it's beginning to sound like I've got a vendetta against Cadden. But it's just because I know the qualities he has, that how good a player he could be. Another aspect I think of it is the with Motherwell's, that this season, everyone in the league, Barry, maybe Dundee and something, know that you need to have power and physicality. Every team has kind of bought that. Like when Gerrard came in, he's like, right, we need to sign a certain type of player that suits Scottish football. And now teams are matching Motherwell in terms of the physicality. I think Robinson said they've tried to play a bit more football. That's debatable.
Basically means bigger Amana came in the team instead of like somebody like Grimshaw or Andy Rose. That's it.
Now, I'm not a Motherwell fan by any stretch of imagination, but their use of social media, particularly their story of the match, is brilliant. Kidding, I guess. A bit boring, bunch of daft marks walking in slow motion all the time. Who cares?
Could we, just before we move on, quick word on Alan Power, who is outstanding in the centre of the park. He is somebody who we've talked about before. He's somebody who has if you asked him what's Alan Power, what's he good at, you'd say he's good at nothing and everything, because he doesn't really have any kind of standout kind of qualities. He just does everything well in the centre. He really gives the ball away, he works hard off the ball, he's disruptive to the opponents, and he just doesn't make the crowd
picks up in second balls.
He picks up second balls, and he just doesn't make the crowd go, "Oh, for fuck's sake, what are you doing?" He just everything that comes to him, he makes the right decision.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up, because that's he struggled at the start of the season when it was just him and Dicker. They were a bit too samey. Shibola, we'll go for that. He's come in, and
it's Shibola.
They've got a better, it's given Kilmarnock a better balance, especially you can play those two in a two, because Tishbola can get on the ball, he can pass it, he can drive forward. He gives a bit of variety to the midfield play, and it's no surprise that Dicker and Boyd are currently sitting on the bench.
Well, I'm not a Kilmarnock fan by any stretch of the imagination, but they're doing quite well at the moment. Now, Celtic have experienced one of the worst starts to their season in recent memory, but they were absolutely okay in a 1-0 win over Aberdeen on Saturday. Scott Sinclair scored a lovely back heel to win the game. Certainly, judging by the highlights in Sports Scene, they looked a bit more fluent and a bit more slicker.
There was still a lot of wastefulness in the final third, and they don't quite look at it yet at that end of the park. I think it tells you
why.
God knows, that's a question everybody's asking, but I think it tells you everything about this game that Celtic fans kind of were unanimously praising the performance of Jack Henry and Dedrick Bata and not really many other players.
Jesus,
and also shows you the kind of threat that Aberdeen poised as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Aberdeen, the expression "couldn't score in a brothel" was perhaps invented for Aberdeen. Joe, what did you think of the match?
I came out pretty impressed with Aberdeen. Actually, I was amazed. I got told some people there that it was a dross game, which at the time didn't surprise me, because both have been very boring this season. But to give McInnes his due, they went there with an attacking lineup. They had two wide men, two strikers, and
well, making a play for number 10, did they not?
They had four attacking players. GMS was...
GMS looked good.
He's been, I think, their probably their most consistent attacking player this season. And just to clarify, his manager doesn't know this. No one on Sportsound knows this. It's Gary Mackay-Stephen. It's not got an S at the end. It's Gary Mackay-Stephen.
Funny you should bring up his manager in relation to Mackay-Stephen, because that was the point I was going to make, is that McInnes was asked about him on a Sportsound that I was, can't remember when it was, I've been trying to belt through as many kind of Scottish football podcasts as possible so I can go back to my work and actually know what's actually happening.
Don't mind you listen to Sportsound then.
Yes.
take it.
And he was asked about Mackay-Stephen being in great form this season and like finally being back to his best. McInnes kind of defended him by saying, "Oh, well, I thought he was really good last year." And he was good in stages, but he didn't have a great start to the season, and he was still very inconsistent, even for Mackay-Stephen's standards. I think this season he has looked at his best. In fact, he's maybe shown a consistency this season that he's maybe never shown, and that he's been pretty good in just about every single game. And without him, Aberdeen, I think, would be in real trouble. Not like relegation, but in terms of like, there's still a hope for them that if Wilson, who had a few moments, a few flashes,
he looks okay
Celtic,
so far, looks
yeah,
okay.
If he can be the type of player they're hoping that he is, then Aberdeen should still be looking to challenge Hibs and Hearts. But if it wasn't for Mackay-Stephen's form, they'd already be almost counted out of it.
There was two moments in the game I'd like to talk about. The first one was Scott McKenna's foul on Odson Edouard. Seemed like a sort of weird scissor kick, the sort of thing you might see in Lucha Libre. What did you think of that?
It was a wee bit high. It's a shocker.
Stephen Thompson said maybe it was a booking. Maybe.
It was very high.
It's got to be a red.
The position he was in, he seemed to be taking a very aggressive lesbian sex position.
Oh, scissoring.
Yeah.
Yeah, when the... That's how the Scissor Sisters got their name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah. Anyway, when you say a player was reckless and not in control, that was very much so with McKenna.
Yes.
The second moment was Scott Sinclair's goal, which is a fabulous piece of improvisation. He got the ball with his back to goal and just gently prodded it past Joe Lewis with the back of his heel. It could, with Edwards out for, we don't know how long he's going to be out for, but
it's just a dead leg, I think.
Right, okay. Well, I was going to say, is this the time where Scott Sinclair can reclaim his place within the Celtic team? And as a follow-up question, why do you think he has regressed so badly, given how superb he started at Celtic?
Teams have certainly cottoned on towards the end of his first season when they were fantastic. Aberdeen certainly were one of the teams to take a more proactive stance on combating him and Tierney, because those two in the 16-17 season were just fantastic. The combination they had with Sinclair driving infield, Tierney racing down the left, left defences kind of traumatised. Aberdeen went and played man marking as they do often when they go to Celtic Park against Tierney and Sinclair. And since then, it just seems I don't know if it's a case of Sinclair getting perhaps a bit too complacent. With how easy, maybe how easy he thought Scottish football was, and teams just being more wise to him, that combination has clearly affected his confidence.
Yeah, it does seem like a confidence thing. It just looks, the last year, he just looked a lot more kind of
predictable.
There was a bit of lethargy in the way that he kind of moved, like he'd done that move so often, like yeah. Get the ball on the left, cut inside, have a shot. But everything seemed to just go that just a little bit slower, so that he was kind of almost bored by doing it, kind of thing.
And giving opposition a chance.
Yeah, and then so often you would then see the shot get blocked. Whereas in his first season, I don't quite buy the argument that teams have cottoned onto him. I don't know what you're saying about the zone obviously giving somebody else a chance, but at the same time, I think by the end of his first season, teams had cottoned onto it, but he still couldn't stop it. Because it's like Arjen Robben. It's like, you know what he's going to do, but stopping it's a very different thing. If you don't know the exact second when he's going to take that step inside, you can't stop it. And it just got a lot more predictable for me, just in the way that he moved, and he just telegraphed it to the defender that he was, right, now he's when I'm going to make my move, and it was much easier to block it. But for the goal, signal a turnaround. I don't know, he didn't play well in the first half of last season, and he was still scoring. And then that kind of led to a drought. So I would say that one goal might not quite, you know, give him the boost. But he's kind of saying all the right things. So we'll just have to kind of wait and see, I suppose.
So less Arjen Robben, more Christopher Robben. He's a weird little prick that hung about with Winnie the Pooh.
Just before we go on to the final game.
You've ruined my link there into you're waiting to see how we're going to tee that up in the St Mirren game.
Sorry.
Too late.
Yeah, I think we should just move on.
I just want to say that I'm looking forward to Derek McInnes playing James Wilson on the wing and Cosgrove up front for the rest of the season.
Frightening. Anyway, the final game of the season.
Did you pick Christopher Robben?
Oh, I did nothing. I was just going to body Joel there, but there's no. What's the point? He bodies himself. The final game this the weekend was fairly uneventful. St Mirren 0, Hibernian 1. Hibs won the match through David Gray's 14th minute header, and they missed some pretty good chances over the course of the match to put a bit more gloss in the scoreline. Any thoughts on this game?
This is our one. I'm like, who are these guys?
Who do you want to know?
Right, Cameron McPherson's a midfielder.
Yeah, youngster.
Young midfielder. Yeah, apparently had a very good first half, a very poor first half and good second.
Good
half.
Yeah, he did.
Good at crossing the ball as well.
Not sure.
Okay. Simeon Jackson.
Yeah, Simeon Jackson.
They've just signed him. He's
forward.
He's got a lot of championship.
He's obviously a very unique name, Simeon Jackson. But I've got a friend in the office who's a St Mirren fan. He was very impressed by his performance. Said he missed a reason. Bogdan pulled off a decent save.
Yeah, the one time Effie Ambrose was
strolled it.
Absolutely brilliant. However, the one time St Mirren kind of broke free off Ambrose was Jackson. Really good play. Got the ball, turned him, nutmegged him. As an aside, I don't think I've seen a defender get as nutmegged as many times as Effie Ambrose has in the past 2 months. He's just something up with his body position. Anyway, yeah, he did fantastic, and it was a good save from Bogdan. He jacks him in comparison to Brock Madsen, that dumpling. Jackson's a lot more mobile. He is more of a goal threat. He'll run in behind. He did have times where he'll hold the ball.
So he does things.
He does things. Whereas Brock Mattins is, he's like
he's there.
He's like a totem pole. Just a really ungainly shit totem pole. And who's the other forward? Danny Mullen. I think he's been good, but he's not the striker that you want to hang your hat on to keep you in the Premiership.
I think that's certainly something St Mirren could be doing with. As a striker they can hang their hat on. They've scored 3 goals this season, 2 of them against Dundee, one of them where Jack Hamilton fell over, and the third goal was actually an own goal, Jimmy Dunn own goal when Hearts beat them 4-1. Why is St Mirren finding goals so hard to come by this term?
Talent.
Taking Lewis Morgan out,
signing guys exclusively from Jamie Vardy's football academy.
But like Kyle McGuinness, Jack Ross at the end of last season, Jack Ross had an interview, good interview with Sky Sports, and he talked up Lewis Morgan, but then he was even more effusive in his praise of McGuinness, and I've not seen it since he's made the step up. Ryan Flynn, I think, has been okay. I still think he doesn't really. Kearney is. You can see that he's not happy with the squad because he has had a forward from Fiorentino in on trial. He signed Jackson, he signed Anton Ferdinand, and he's got Lewis McGugin, who had quite a good reputation at one point in the Championship with Notts Forest.
That's his name ringing a buzzer.
Yeah, and so he's on trial. They've got, I think it was the fact that St Mirren, who have one of the most buoyest fans in Scotland, that they applauded the team off at the end of the game. There was positives in that second half to take, and I still think it's a work in progress. The good thing is that they've got Hamilton. You never know what you're getting from, and Dundee, that they're not in danger of getting cut off adrift at the bottom. And it doesn't help when their goalkeeper dies out the way of shots.
We should probably give some praise to Hibs, seeing as they're in second place, just 5 points off the famous. The thing that Hibs fans should be very happy about is the fact that they have nowhere near hit their stride yet.
No.
And they're still second in the table and still only 5 points behind Hearts, who, I mean, it's hard to say that Hearts could have had a better start to the league season than they have. So, Joel still thinks Hearts will win the title. I think that shows that the battle between the Edinburgh clubs is far from
Will win the title. I said that they could win the title.
Anything could happen.
However,
Nike advert over there.
I do feel it's going to be two. That's going to be down to 2 points. I've bad feeling about Hearts going to Ibrox next week, because when I go there we never win. And Hibs have got home in Motherwell, which I'm sure it's home in Motherwell. No, it can't be home in Motherwell. They're home to someone who's not Ranger, Celtic, or Aberdeen.
Hope not a football team.
So they should pick up 3 points. But yeah, the Milligans came back in. McLaren's are injured, but
Hamilton,
there you go. Yeah, easy 3 points. Canberry is getting back up to speed. David Grace came back in from the cold. He's picked up a couple of injuries. Sorry, he's came back from having been injured quite a bit last season.
The Grainesons.
Yes. I would never use that term. But so that's allowed Lennon to play with a back 4, or they can go but with a back 3. It's one where I'm not sure Lennon knows what his best 11, but I don't think
definitely
that
not.
Particularly matters, because they are flexible.
Yeah.
So it's not a case of players coming in and out and there's a dramatic drop off in talent or in form. I forgot to look into it, but I wanted to find out how many games McGeoch, Mallon and Allen played together last season. I don't think it was that many, because that's the big thing. All 3 of them left, and it's like, how are you going to replace them? But I would be surprised if they played 12 games starting together, because obviously Allen only came in January.
Yeah,
I'd be surprised at that many. You look at it now and
probably about that.
Oh, I said Mallon, McGinn, sorry, McGeoch, McGinn and Allen. Mallon has been, I'm getting confused here. Mallon has been fantastic this season. He's played in a deeper role. Heinemann's coming on to it. Again, they've got players who are coming in and they've got levels to go to. Milligan's came in and he's robust and just gave him a base in midfield. It's, I think there's a lot to be positive about Hibs, even though they've not been at their slickest.
Is there anything else you want to say about the weekend's games?
No, that's everything.
Well, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to today's show. Before we go, just a bit of housekeeping. Remember, pay your $2 a month. We nod to Texas Fowler there. $2 a month gets you to our Patreon account. The Patreon account's well worth your time. There's loads of funny podcasts, hilarious non sequiturs, and really great stories, particularly about Sean McGuigan's desperate love life. On top of that, we also do two podcasts a week, as you're probably aware of. The one coming up on Thursday will be a lower league special. Am I involved with that?
If you want.
I might do, actually. I've fucking nothing else on this week. So that we'll be talking about the lower leagues there from the Championship, League 1 and League 2, and there's loads to talk about after this weekend. So I'd like to thank the two guys for joining me. Thank you, Joel Skid.
Thank you. I'm now going to listen to Scissor Sisters after that revelation.
They were shite. The Scissor Sisters. Laura was good.
They had a couple of good songs, a couple of good tracks.
Not for me, Clive. Laura was good.
I'm sure there was another.
Comfortably Numb was shite, and Take Your Mum was shite. Take Your Mum was a desperate song.
Laura, is that the one?
Laura, won't you give me some time? Like I say, thank you to the returning Craig Fowler. It's your first day back for a month. How do you think you got on?
6 out of 10.
And my name's Craig Telfer. I thought I did an 8.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.